Good morning.
Good morning. That actually wasn't my hand. That was a friend of mine's hand.
Oh, good. All right.
I know they're training. So we have Tampa's done a dark day every week. They close the track down on Monday, and everybody gets an easy day. So we were thinking about going out and getting a boat, and we weren't sure when the whole coronavirus thing came out. We didn't know if they'd allow it, but they did, and so we had a big time. But it's nice to have a day off here and there, you know?
Well, now you're dangling. Who was it? Who put that thing through their hand?
A buddy of mine named Nick Caruso. He trains down here in Tampa, and he's a good fisherman. And it was a sheer accident. It was complete accident. He's by no means a rookie.
I love it. That's pretty funny. Well, the great tradition of horsemen fishing on off days, and frankly, when it comes to David Fox and Joe Bravo, they don't even need off days.
Every day's a good fishing day, I guess.
They're big time. You ever go out with Bravo or Fox?
No, I haven't. I've heard Bravo's a good fisherman. When we go to Jersey, I'm going to have to hook up with him, and I'm sure he's got some good spots.
Well, call him the old man in the sea. That's my nickname, and it just so happened when I sprung that several years ago, they were out on Fox's boat and they were listening to the show, and I got a text like, what the fuck? What do you mean, old man in the sea? I've That's laughed good. About that for years. Unbelievable. Well, Ken, you know. Obviously, you know, you talk about being in Tampa and mm-hmm. the winter extending and basically keeping keeping your owners happy. And this is, you know, Gulfstream and Oaklawn and mm-hmm. Tampa. And we just talked about what's going on at Fonner and Will Rogers. Talk about the situation and being able to, you know, stay somewhere right now safe and run horses.
Yeah, that's where you said it right there. Like you said, some of these tracks are shutting down training as well, and I think that's detrimental to everybody's businesses, not to mention the horses. Probably most importantly, the horses are the ones cooped up. But yeah, we're lucky down here in Tampa. It's always been a good place to train. Now it's staying open, and we're, you know, under the conditions and protocols and things like that, which they've done a good job with. But we're super lucky to be open. And I think everybody that's here appreciates that as well. Everybody around the track there's a friendly buzz of, God, we're racing. That's great. You know, it's not many times do you see the overnights like it is now. I mean, the overnight is full of entries. So, I mean, the racing office, it's great for them because they're getting these horses that people are saying, well, where are we going to run them? And so the races are filling, and that means, you know, it's a trickle-down effect. The people on the front side are happy that are crunching the numbers, and the back side's happy because we're still racing. And then, yeah, but as far as day-to-day stuff goes, we haven't changed really anything. You know, of course we put in the safety protocols and things like that, but that doesn't change the fact that that horse has to have its feet picked out, and he's got to be walked for 25 minutes, and he's got to train, you know? So there's so much that, and especially it's hard to think when you're talking about down the road where we're going to be in a month. So from my standpoint, I've got half my barn are better horses that I can plan things like that, like an A other than or two other than on the grass or on the dirt. Those races are going to go, and they're going to be 2 weeks from now. It's the claimers that you wonder, okay, well, am I going to have to change what I'm going to do to get them to this race in 2 weeks, but is it even going to happen? So you need to change the way you train a little bit, I guess, up with the uncertainty factor. But like I said, the day-to-day stuff, you know, like I read somebody said that the wheelbarrows and things are labeled. Well, my stuff's already labeled. We got guys that have their names on pitchforks and rakes and wheelbarrows as well. And when you just cut down on, the problem was when we couldn't get much cleaning supplies, you know, so when you're talking about needing disinfectant, that stuff's coming back around now. And the hand washes and the chlorhexidine, all that kind of stuff you can put in buckets. And, but it's all good stuff that we should have been practicing all along. You know, you walk into a grocery store these days and you hit the hand sanitizer pump. And, well, I mean, hell, we should be doing that every day anyway, you know. But it's good habits for us, and I think we're kind of going the right direction. And hopefully if we can keep following these protocols, then we might be able to stay racing indefinitely, you know. Just maybe it carries right on like it would normally.
Where would you be right now, Kent, once the prime part of the Tampa season and Gulfstream's, post-Florida Derby, typically people break camp, would you be elsewhere already? Under normal circumstances.
I had some vans penciled in to leave the 12th of April. the backside of Monmouth is going to open the 11th. So we were going to slide right in there. And when we get up there, we could run at all these tracks, New York, Parks, Laurel, places like that. Now all that sort of, it's all put on hold. So we have to appreciate where we're at right now in Tampa, knowing that not any day, I don't know if that's the case, but, you know, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, are they going to say, well, listen, guys, the meet's up. Y'all got to go. You know, or they say, you know what, no, we're going to keep training, or we're going to just talk about people saying they're going to apply for more dates. And that's definitely not my department, but it would be great if they could. I'm sure it's a lot harder to do than people think. But even keeping the track open and saying, well, they've done really well with the purses. So, you know, maybe that can somehow play into our favor of saying, we'll keep it open for you guys, you know, and that would be great for us. But again, what about the rest of the country? What are they going to do? You know, the guys at Palmetto's that are stuck over there, or the people that are in Louisiana or Oakland. So hopefully things start improving pretty rapidly.
Well, we continue to monitor, and, you know, we hear from track managements that are in this unique position and are essentially, you know, just dealing with, you know, the ambient, particularly in New York, where they sense that, you know, they can't even consider. I mean, right now they're scheduled to be paused until the end of April, near the end of April. But given how desperate and how just how awful the body count is right now in New York, they're not going to run. It's just not something you're going to do. I mean, it's you're going to wait until.
But I don't think they can keep. They can't just keep tacking on days. You know, they're going to have to say, when it gets a bit closer, maybe a week out, they're going to say, you know what, this isn't going to be feasible. We need to back it up a month. You know, and that's what I think. Instead of having to change the date 3 or 4 times, they're probably, same with Monmouth. You know, Monmouth has pushed it back to be the first opening, the backside, the 1st of May, racing the end of May. Well, what are they going to do now? Say, okay, we're going to push it back 2 weeks and then push it back 2 weeks again. So, you know, I see why there hasn't been many commitments, just because of the uncertainty factor.
Well, we're hoping for the best. Then, in the meantime, you're prepared with the horses you're sending out, and what a nice, interesting variety over the weekend, Friday and Saturday, with these four successes from a total of 5 starts, and you know, some of them are nuts and bolts. You know, a dropper like Northern. You won the 3rd race on Friday. Northern was taken for 8,000, and you tried him, you know, in kind of a little bit of a tougher spot, and then you dropped him down to 62.5, and it worked.
Yeah, that's the bread and butter. Those are the horses that I'm talking about. When you look at the overnight and you see a race that pops up and you think, well, this horse, when are we going to run him again? When will we hit the next race? It might not be for 2 months. So you think, if the horse is doing good and bounced back, then take a crack at it. You know, where the allowance race that we won, the 2 races after that, that's horse, you plan ahead for that horse. You know, you run there and you kind of think down the road. So it was a unique group of horses that we ran. We had the bottom. You had a Never Win 3 for 8. We won an allowance race and came right back the next day with one other than allowance too. So it was that's a pretty cool group of horses to run.
You won for Wayne Spalding, and of course we first came across Wayne with Buchero, Bullard's Alley.
Bullard's Alley
with Glyshaw and Blue Chicory, you know, this is a lower level mare, a 6-year-old, and she doesn't have very many miles on her.
No, she doesn't at all, and she's a pretty easy filly to train, to be honest with you. She's a big hardy mare, so she doesn't, you know, you can kind of train on her a little bit, but she's a good doer. She's happy. She kind of found the races at Gulfstream. We got some different rides on her and things like that we were trying this or trying to stretch her out. And, I don't know. She found it a little bit easier, and she put him away early, and that was it.
And you got to bring her back to the barn too. There was one claim in the race. So these were $8,000 claimers, and Angel Suarez, you know, boot and scoot from the 10 hole.
Yeah, I like that. They, you know, obviously they break right in front of the grandstand, and with no fans there, you get a pretty clear view of the race. And yeah, I was glad he shook her up out of that. One of the reasons I put Angel on her was she needed somebody aggressive, and we used a bunch of different jockeys that day that all fit horses for different reasons. You know, sometimes you need somebody that's going to hustle one out of there and continue to ride, or you need somebody who's patient, or you need You know, sometimes horses are can be lazy in the afternoons, and you need somebody to wake them up and get them on the engine a little bit, or you need one to quiet down. So it was pretty cool winning those races with those jocks that day.
Let's talk about Wilmer Garcia and Count Again. This is a Samson homebred, and Awesome Again out of a Red Ransom mare. My God. How old was the mare? I got to look that up.
He's a brown paper bag, as you could expect, too. There's not any white on him. He's just a plain Jane. He flies under the radar, but he's the coolest horse around. He's kind of a barn favorite, and Samson Farm's done a good job getting him back, and they do a good job at the farm, and they have a good operation. So it's really cool to win for those. I used to walk hops for Mark Frostad on spring break when I was probably 12.
And, wow.
I remember walking some of those horses that you still see in the pedigrees now, and you know, lots happened with Samson, and I'm hoping things are on the up and up that we can keep having success for them. That's great to have them in the barn.
Is this the first horse they sent you?
No, I've had a couple for them in the last few years. They'll usually give a horse a break sometimes when Woodbine's finished. And then by the time we're finishing up, they almost need to give them a race. And if they run decent enough, we get to keep them. If they need something else or they didn't thrive in how we did it, then they go up to Woodbine. But they're super easy to deal with. And like I said, the horses are well-bred, and they've got a lot of class to them. And the couple that I've had that have run over here have come from Neil Howard. And as you know, I'm sure you couldn't find a nicer guy. And he gave me a lot of help on just, you know, how they're going to settle in and things like that. And it worked out really good for him. That was I didn't watch the replay when I first got the horse in. I looked at the form and looked him up, and I looked at the horse, and I said, well, okay, I think he's going to fit in that spot. And I had some people text from Kentucky that said, man, that horse really won nice at Keeneland last fall. And so they said, I'm curious to see how he's going to run today. And he had done well. He trained good and all that. So we just thought, well, I think he should be right there. And turning for home when Wilmer had to dart inside horses, and it was a very crafty ride. But if he had gotten stuck, there'd be some upset people.
Well, and you know, Wilmer Garcia, the kid that when he broke in New York, he really made a splash, and then he got hurt. He was in a terrible car accident. He was driving, he was doing the day-night doubleheader thing, and on an icy road, I think going to Penn National, and lost a big swath of time and was in a halo and really bad. And you know, how much it's taken out of his career is hard to know, but he's a, at this point, you know, he's a reliable journeyman, and you know, I always had affection for him as a rider.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I do too. He's probably the hardest working jock at Tampa, and he's not number one in the standings, but he shows up every day, and like you said, he's reliable. You know, when you've got a horse that you need this to be done, or you need to try this or try that, he's game to try it. And he, like I said, he comes by the barn, so he understands how much we put into it, you know, and sees how hard we work, and he wants to try to equal that. So it worked out good for us the other day.
Well, Count Again, a 5-year-old, and actually, I looked it up. Red Ransom actually was 14 when he covered the mare, Count to Three, and this is actually a half brother of Ransom the Moon, who was a hell of a horse.
Yeah, he was a horse that went from when I think Samson might have sold him, and he went to California, and he must have loved the air out there, because it turned him around, that's for sure.
Ransom the Moon, I think, is standing actually in California as it
he
happens.
Might be. He ran in all those sprint stakes out there, all the great.
He won the Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby, yeah, exactly. Ran the British Cup maybe twice.
Ron Ellis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was it.
Look at that. I'll tell you what. It's like a steel trap. Yeah. Saturday, we turn to philosophy and Two River. This is a horse that you own with. Who's Two Rivers Racing?
Two Rivers Racing is John Koenig in Jersey. And long story short, his wife is friends with my mom's first cousin, I think. And so when they read an article and somehow it got to John in Jersey. And so John reached out and said, you know what? let's get a horse together, which was great. So we bought a horse off of Stone Farm, Arthur Hancock, at the September sale a few years ago. And oddly enough, big Arthur Hancock stayed in for a leg of the horse. So that horse was owned Two Rivers and Stone Farm, and we had some luck with him. He won a race for us, and it was all good. And so when I actually met John the first time at that sale, and we're walking around the sale, and we kind of hit it off a little bit. And so I came down to Florida and did this and that. And then I called him. It was probably this time 2 years ago. And I called Ben Huffman. I sent in my applicant, my stall app for Churchill. And so Ben Huffman called and said, "We need to talk." So he sat down and pulled up all the horses that I had on my stall app. And he just said, "You know, I hate to say this," he said, "but these horses aren't going to fit in Kentucky." And I was crushed. I was heartbroken. And I was like, "Oh, what am I going to do? I don't know. I live in Kentucky. I'm from Kentucky. These owners, these horses, right?" So I sat on it for a couple of days, and I made my mind up that I was going to go to Jersey. And so without knowing that John Koenig from Two Rivers was actually from Jersey, I picked up the phone. I said, "John, I'm really, really sorry. This might kind of break our relationship here." I said, "But I'm going to have to go to New Jersey." And he was quiet on the phone for a second, and he said, "Well, Kent, I live about 10 minutes from Monmouth Park." So it ended up working out really good. And so when I got up there, he found me a place to live and hooked me up with all the right people. And I've had really good horses for him ever since. I probably have four or five for him now. He's had some with Claudio Gonzalez and people like that over the years. And I think he's kind of enjoying his kids are growing a little bit, so he can spend some more time around the horses, and he likes it. So cool. I have some really cool clients that I've sort of picked up in roundabout ways. Some from Jimmy Jerkins. I got a guy, Rich Newman, that supported me from day one. And it's been cool. Mandy Pope sent me a couple, and I had a couple for Joe Allen over the years. It's been a really cool group of people that all have different reasons why they own horses. Most people do. You know, you usually have a few different reasons why people own horses. They like to win races, just because it's a sheer, you know, they love to win. Some people like to gamble. Some people like to breed and see their name as the breeder, and they want to progress the breed. And then some people like to feed carrots and pet on their horses and watch the majesty of the whole thing. And so I've got a real good group that they all sort of have a different reason why they're in it. And sometimes they cross over. We put that horse Fat Man together with a group of people that had never met each other. And the other day when we were at the Pegasus, they all exchanged numbers, and they have a little group text going. And I think it's really cool that horse racing can bring people like that together that didn't know each other. They have nothing in common. We didn't talk politics. We didn't talk about anything religion. It's all about the horses and having fun. And it's fun that way. It's a lot more fun that way.
Well, this horse we're talking about, Philosophy, who's now won a couple in a row, and This is a major, you know, Scarlet Tango is a major mare. This has got all kinds of sibling power.
Mm-hmm. When I bought him that day, I was shocked at when he came out of the stall. I was like, "Man, this thing is like a little rocket ship." I sort of thought he might be a little bit stretchier version of a usual typical Spiketown, but when he came out, he was just atypical Spiketown. And so I said, Let's rock and roll and try to get him. And, you know, we didn't vet the horse. I jogged him up and down on the road, and we had about 10 or 15 I wanted to try to bid on, and we were on a budget. So I said, "You know what, it was half my money as well." So I said, "You know what, I'll take the blame if something goes wrong." And I kind of put it on my shoulders and said, "Let's do it." And got him down here, and we gelded him, and we did a little minor thing to his throat, which it's hard to really tell if it's worked or not. But I think the main thing was he got on hard ground. You know, he's a hard ground kind of horse, and he seems to be super, super quick when he can hear his feet rattle. And at Fairgrounds, when Mark Cassie had him, I think he was, that 5.5 at Fairgrounds is probably more like 6 furlongs, you know, and it can sometimes get a little boggy down there. They had bad weather the last few months. And I think he just struggled all over that ground. And so, you know, I needed a horse to go down to Gulfstream. Well, I was going to have a Gulfstream string this winter, and I thought, you know what, we can always run this horse, never win 3 for 16. And that's what we did. We ended up giving him one shot here to make sure he was fit, took him to Gulfstream, and he flew over there. He absolutely rolled on that turf course, and I thought, man, maybe he's just a hard ground kind of horse. And sure enough, the other day, geez, he ran a 94 buyer.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that was super strong for a horse that was just winning the A of the event. So he could be a lot of fun, and I think we haven't figured out now that what he likes, what he doesn't like, and not just in the ground, but in his training and stuff. He's not a, he doesn't train the way most horses might. He's a funny little horse to train, and he seems to be super happy right now.
Well, here's a sibling of another grade one winner, a Terra's Tango. Speaking of West Coast, West Coast grade one winners, and also a half to Visionaire.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Matz.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody. I was talking to Jimmy Jerkins about him the other day. He said, Jimmy said he ran second in the King's Bishop, I think, when Visionaire, he was a centennial horse that he ran second with. And we were talking about Visionaire. Anyway, yeah, that wasn't Michael Matz's horse.
Whatchamacallit? Barry Irwin, no? And
Team Valor, wasn't it?
Team Valor, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that's
he's
what I thought.
He's standing someplace, too. I don't think he was a gelding. He's a colt, I believe.
I think he's standing, like, in Korea. I think he got it. Yeah, I think he got exported. He was nice. Yeah, he was a serious one-turn horse.
That's a serious family. Terra's Tango, Visionaire. I'm looking at it right now. Scarlet Strikes in it. The mares had three graded stakes winners. Maybe we'll make it four with Philosophy. We'll see.
It seems like South. And thank you, Steve Carlin, who's one of our partners as well as Team Valor. He's standing in South Africa, is where Visionaire is.
Okay, that makes sense.
Jimmy finished behind him with Desert Key. Oh my God! There's a horse I haven't thought about in. Literally since 2008.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Here's the King's Bishop that year, and Visionaire won clear by 2.25, and he was 7-1. The favorite was JBK. Oh my God!
Wow, that was his horse, right?
Yes, and Visionaire, Desert Key, I'm So Lucky was third, John Ward. How about that? Here's a favorite. Lantana Mob was in this race with Kodiak Cowboy. They were an entry.
Who rode Lantana Mob?
Ramon.
Really?
Ramon.
Gabe Saez. I was trying to think the other day what the first good horse Ricardo Santana rode for Asbison. I was trying to think who it was. Well, there was one in particular that I feel like sort of really hit them off.
At that time, Lantana Mob was with Trombetta because I've got his.
Oh, really?
I got a saddle cloth. I got. Did you know Mike's assistant Juan?
No.
Juan gave me that saddle cloth.
Really?
Yes. And I've got a big hanger with, you know, probably 15. I've got including Sweet Northern Saint when he went down to Texas for the Steve Sexton Mile, and but I've got Lantana Mob. I want to say I bet you it's from the King's Bishop. Actually, I bet you it's from this race.
That would be wild if it is.
Salute the Sarge was in this race. Salute the Sarge. Unbelievable. Yeah, Crazy Gio. And actually, here's a horse that I have a picture with, Golden Spikes, that Marty Wolfson had.
Wow.
I got a picture, me and John Parada down at Calder in Vietnam there, with Golden Spikes. He was okay. Unbelievable. This is what's so great about quarantine racing.
That's it. You bring a blast from the past, don't you? That's what I do. When I'm bored, I use a thing called Thorough Manager. You can pull up all kinds of old horses on there. And it's actually been really cool to see. I don't know who does it on Twitter, but somebody will put up the old PPs of the best horses. You know, the horses.
Sure.
Seattle Sleuth PPs came up the other day. Oh, you had Gopher Wand. It was her birthday, I guess, the other day.
Yeah.
Her PP popped up, and it's amazing. And going back and looking at Secretariat's workout history leading up through all of his races, you know, he'd breeze a mile 4 days out before the race and then come back and blow out again. Oh, it was wild what they used to do with those horses. But that's when they were just made of iron, you know.
Unbelievable. Kent Sweezy is with us. We're having a lot of fun, and got about 5-6 minutes, Kent, to talk about tomorrow. Let's take a look at the first leg of this pick five. There's a big six-figure carryover in the pick five tomorrow, and you're going to send out a Sky Mesa filly, Finest Jewel, and this is a mile and a 16th, 16 non-winners of two, and you're going to put blinkers on.
Yeah, the blinker's on. I'm not sure. I'm chucking something out there. She trained really good. She was with Neil Howard before and ran one race and came to us. And she ran okay and then came right back and won. And that was a rider change. She's a strong filly. She's big. She's 16 and change, and she's powerful, and she's just a beast out there on the racetrack. So when they're going down the backside, I think she kind of took a hold of the jock that day, and he might have said, whoa, I don't know about all this, and didn't let her run very good. So I said, well, we'll do a jock change next time. I knew nothing was wrong with her. She was just doing that good, and he probably should have just turned her head loose a little bit and let her run. But anyway, I put Gary Wales on her, and Gary seemed to fit her real good, and she ducked in between horses and shot through a hole and actually ran really good for the maiden 25. So I said, well, you know what? It's nobody's claiming horses these days. So when you win for 25, you can probably go ahead and run them for the 16th. She's a grass filly. She's older. You know, she's got a really nice pedigree, but she, had that time off. So people have to wonder, but so the never went two for 16 was pretty tough that day, actually. And, she was 18-1 the day that she ran a first time against winners. And I think this time she's morning line 6-1. So, it would appear to be an easier spot on paper. And I don't know. You know, we're at the point now where I just talked to the owner earlier. I said, let's look hard at this race. If it's something we want to do, let's go ahead and run her, because we aren't sure what we'll have down the line. And as long as she's doing good and we're happy on our end, I think we should probably go ahead and enter. So we did, and I'm happy with where we are. She's training good. I watched her this afternoon, late this morning, train, and with the blinkers on, she's sharp. And maybe it'll just get her where she might have hung a little bit. Maybe those blinkers get her a bit more focused and can run towards the wire a bit more. So we'll see. But she's training good. I like her in that spot.
Finest Jewel, she's 6-1 in the first leg of tomorrow's pick five carryover sequence at Tampa. Kent Sweezy sends her out. And then we get to a maiden special weight nightcap. And this is on the grass. And this is interesting and kind of a mixed bag field. Again, looking at a horse, a little bit of a price, a 12-1 Screen Image. She's a Giants Causeway 5-year-old mare. She missed all of 2019. She's out of a Dynaformer mare, and George Krikorian bred her. And probably was cut out to be a nice horse. Jonathan Shepherd trained her from the start of her career. You've had one start this winter. That came about a month ago. And she ran kind of evenly, kind of chased from behind. And I suppose that might have been a useful effort.
I think so. She's, like you said, lots of better pedigree. She's huge. You know, so she's a big train to get going. But once you get her going, I wish the race was even further. But she had a little time off for a small minor injury. They gave her plenty of time and brought her back. And she definitely fits in these spots. I think this isn't a super tough maiden here at Tampa like you would sometimes get maybe 2 months ago. But, you know, I think she's a nervous type. So when she comes back off a long layoff, the first thing she's going to do is think, oh, God, I'm back. And she got herself a little bit worked up, not too bad in the paddock in the post parade. And we've worked on that a little bit. And I think with a race under her belt, she should be a little bit sharper. And she had a really nice little blowout the other day. She's, like I said, she is so big. So she's super sound, but she just, you know, I'd love to go give her this big two-turn work, like let her stretch her legs out a little bit. But we didn't need that because the race was coming up. So I just let her just touch the gas pedal a little bit. And, man, when she gets that stride going, it would be nice to see if she can get a nice clean run and sort of maybe a crafty type of ride from Wilmer that, once she does get that huge stride going, don't take anything away from her, you know. So we'll see. I think she should be a bit more forwardly placed and have more gas in the tank coming down the lane.
Screen Image, and you know, there are some there are some of the usual suspects in here, including Clement, who loves to sneak wins in at Tampa. He's got a first-time starter, Gaelic Gold, who's actually the 3-1 morning line favorite. Shug, who suddenly is sending horses over from Payson Park and is scoring, and he's got my man, Willie Martinez. He's got Willie, and gets LASIK's first time 3-year-old. This is a Malibu Moon of Stu Janney's out of Hit It Rich, who was a personal favorite, the Smart Strike mare. This one certainly cut out to be nice. Eddie Keneally has got a Bodemeister filly for Summer Place called Heavenly Peace. 4-1. You got Nacho Correas in here. You got Vicky Oliver, who is looking for, boy, Vicky's winless on the year. Wow, that's a little surprising. She's nobody's more upset with no Keeneland than Vicky Oliver.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I hope she's not listening. She's going to come through the radio on you.
Well, because by now she'd have 4 wins at Keeneland in 3 days.
Exactly. Lidham's got one in there that looks pretty tough.
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
Keneally came over and won one the other day that ran pretty good. So I think this horse might be... That one might be the one to beat.
Yeah, they're always after his lucky charms.
That's right.
Kent... This was tremendous fun, and I can't thank you enough. We always have a great time when you visit, and 4 wins out of 5 starters Friday and Saturday at Tampa, and obviously, you know, making the most of the bad situation and treading water until we get up to Oceanport. Good luck tomorrow, and we'll talk soon, undoubtedly.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you. Appreciate it.
A lot of fun. Kent Sweezy, and you can follow Kent, of course, on Twitter, and that's at Sweezy, and there's a E between the Z and the Y, SWEEZEYK, Kent Sweezy, and does a tremendous job, and you can just hear from that roster of owners how it'll kind of horses. Here, hey, quarantine Barbie, go do your thing. We'll take the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Jen Shaw is going to join us from Dean Dorton, the accounting firm and consulting firm that is helping NTRA and horsemen and equine business interests nationwide apply for federal aid during the quarantine period. And we'll talk to her and get some instruction and direction and answer questions. If anybody wants to ask a question on Twitter, go ahead. But she'll provide you everything you want to know. Back after this, Jen Shaw. Second half at the races. Andy Serling in a little while, too, and John White.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us, When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Bringing down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Dick on Sirius XM Radio.
Dunner, rapper, done right, an extinguished crutch of a rolling inside, yellow fingers, nothing lasts, but nearly everything lingers in life. Cell phone service is not that expensive, but that takes commitment and you just don't have it. Feels so effortless to be a stranger, but feeling foreign, such a lonely habit. You can't crop yourself out of the picture, out of focus, but still framed inside. Well, the end got blurry and my heart started hurting for you.
We're back at the races, 25 minutes to the top of the hour, and absolutely delighted that we can spend some time with Jen Shaw from the Dean Dorton group. And of course, last week, Jen, one of the principals in the teleconference that was really well attended, over 900 of you dialed in and got the, you know, initial instructions of how to take advantage of the monies that are come available from the federal government, and whether it's the payroll protection program, that's the one that seems to probably have the broadest appeal and connection, certainly to horsemen. Jen, thanks so much. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. You, family, colleagues, everybody okay?
Yes, everything's, you know, we're all socially distant, but accountants have been practicing that for years, so all doing well.
That's the line of the day. Well done. I'm doing one of these almost every day, Jen, and I want to send these, you know, these missives out there so that everybody that, you know, is thinks they may have an application and that they may have a reason to apply for the various funds. Let's run it down for, sure, you know, who it touches and how they go about, you know, if they've never done anything like this before, it can feel a little bit overwhelming.
Of course. And quite frankly, we're all in this together because the CARES Act that was passed on March 27th created this wholly new program called the Paycheck Protection Program for these loans. And so we're all learning this process together. It's sort of unprecedented for the federal government to pass something and then implement it within, supposed to be implemented within a week or, you know, week and a half. I think some of the banks are still getting on their feet. But the whole idea is to get cash in the pockets of businesses and individuals as soon as possible with all these. I mean, there's three laws that were passed in March. So really, we're all going through change together. So I think we're all learning, you know, sort of some of these programs as more guidance comes out, too.
The one that has the widest appeal and the widest application, the Paycheck Protection?
Yes. you want to talk, I can just give you a little bit of just overview of that. And, you know, we've called it the, I've had it PPP or PPL, Paycheck Protection Program loan. So yesterday I did another webinar and I just started calling them P3 loans because there's, you know, Paycheck Protection Program loans. So I'll refer to them as P3 today because it's just easier. And the reason why this is sort of the most, that has the most priority right now is that the CARES Act allocated funding of $349 billion to fund this program, and it's capped at that under, you know, so it would take additional legislation to fund this program. So even though this is open until June the 30th of 2020, it's recommended that people apply as soon as possible in case the funding is used. It is a first-come, first-served program. And it is a bit more broad than some of the other normal SBA programs. So this is an SBA program, but you actually go apply through your bank. And it's available in general to businesses with less than 500 employees. And it's key that these employees are reported on W-2s versus like a payment to a contractor on a 1099. Or it's also available to self-employed individuals who generate net self-employment income. And so industry participants who may qualify, trainers with employees with W-2 employees, vet practices with employees, breeding farms, boarding farms that have employees, or any of the above that are self-employed. And the biggest benefit to this program is the ability to have all or a portion of this loan forgiven tax-free. And so there's, you know, some other key provisions that are, again, that broaden normal SBA lending. There's no personal guarantee and there's no collateral that are required to obtain the loan. The loan terms, as they were announced and updated by Treasury last week, it's a 2-year loan at 1% interest with the first payment due 6 months from the date of the loan. And then loans may also be prepaid without penalty. So if you get a loan amount and you find you're not able to use all of it, you can go ahead and prepay that back. You may have some interest cost. The focus right now for getting the applications in is calculating what your loan amount could be. And your maximum loan amount is calculated by taking your average total monthly payments for payroll costs. And for most people, that's during calendar year 2019. And you take that times 2.5, limited to $10 million in total, so it's a lesser of. There's a different period for seasonal employers, and there's a different period if 2020 is your first year in business. But you're looking at your eligible payroll costs would be what you pay to your W-2 employees, including gross salaries, up to $100,000 per year per employee. And then on top of that, any payment of group health care benefits, including insurance premiums, payment of retirement benefits, et cetera. And on the self-employment and on the self-employed individual side, they can include the net earnings from self-employment up to $100,000. So you start doing the math on this, and that's really the key focus right now. There's a separate calculation for figuring out the forgiveness, but for right now, that's the key calculation. And the other benefit, broadening, is that this credit available elsewhere that is normally a requirement for SBA has been waived for these. So this means that owners of the businesses are not required to seek other sources of capital, including equity or debt investments from the owners before they obtain this loan. They just must certify that the uncertainty of current economic conditions makes the loan necessary to support the ongoing operations of the business. And obviously in the horse industry right now, whether you're on the racing or breeding side with canceled sales and canceled racing or postponed racing, that's not a difficult argument or standard to reach to certify.
Obviously, when the way you lay this out in terms of the W-2 payrolled employees and the hot walkers, grooms, foremen, etc., assistants, assistant trainers, you know, the payroll of a trainer's staff. How about you sort of reference commercial breeders and the pinhookers? What's out there for them?
So there's a different program for those that don't have W-2 employees. So if you're, we see it with racing partnerships or, maybe racehorse owners that you just pay the trainers to take care of their horses. There is a bit more restrictive SBA program called the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, or EIDL. And so unlike the P3 loans I just talked about that you go through a bank from an application perspective, you apply for these EIDL loans directly through the SBA, and they actually have an online application that you can use. And, you know, again, it's a bit more restrictive about who qualifies here. In order to qualify for this, it's not necessarily a function of how many employees. It could be a function of your gross receipts. So for those in racing, you know, racehorse owners, trainers, jockeys that have less than $12 million of gross receipts, you could still and don't pay employees via W-2, you could potentially qualify for one of these loans. And again, breeding farms with employees, breeding farms in general are currently ineligible for these EIDL programs only, but they may participate in the more beneficial P3 program if they have employees. So, and that's just a caveat that relates to the SBA the way that it's written right now. So, but for racing partnerships, for trainers, for for other racehorse owners that do not have employees, this could be a good option. And it does provide for a $10,000 advanced grant that does not have to be repaid once your application is processed by the SBA.
What's the parameters for available funds on the EIDL?
So they have for temporarily for this program, because this program has been around for a number of years. The SBA has waived the provision for having existing credit elsewhere, but the borrower must have acceptable credit and the ability to repay these loans. And these loans are working capital loans, so it's perfect for someone who has to continue to pay, training and board, but may have lost income opportunities. And these are, it's less open as to how the SBA calculates these loans, but they're essentially for working capital. So you can't use these to like expand your operations. You can use them to pay accounts payable. But the amount loan depends on the demonstration of need, but it cannot exceed $2 million. And this is calculated by the SBA. The interest rate is 3.75% for businesses, and you can have up to 30 years to repay it. So there is collateral required for loan amounts that are greater than $25,000, but there's some modifications to these normal provisions for these EIDL program loans where personal guarantees are not required unless the loan is above $200,000. But again, we have to, you have to look at, the SBA will be looking at whether there's a acceptable credit from the person or entity requesting the loan and is their ability to repay, but they have relaxed their normal standards on these loans. And also the CARES Act, created this $10,000 advance grant provision that, is not required to be repaid.
Wow. And the lost income opportunity is the instrumental word there. And I had not even, and we've got a very small stable with four horses, but they're all New York breds and we run in New York. And it hadn't even occurred to me that we'd be eligible for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something to consider. I have less guidance as it relates to how the SBA calculates that. But if you think about, have you suffered from the COVID-19 pandemic disaster? Well, yes, because there's not income coming through, but your bills continue to be paid. So it's not really a focus of what income you've lost. It's really more of a focus on what bills you have to continue to pay, but really without that opportunity to generate income, to offset those bills. So something to consider.
Amazing. Unbelievable. So the P3s, the EIDL. Jen, how about independent contractors like farriers and now, of course, the ongoing treatment and care of the horses, people like that actually are probably they're going to continue to bill the way they do. And hopefully, on the other end, are getting paid through some of these auspices. But what about exercise riders? You did refer to jockeys, but are there some areas between the cracks that have been coming up in discussion the last couple of weeks?
So exercise riders, jockeys, anyone that receives 1099 income. they're considered self-employed, and so they probably can apply for the P3 loans because they're self-employed individuals on their net self-employment income. So, I used an example when I did a something for NISA yesterday, where a trainer pays an independent contractor $50,000. And that independent contractor might have a couple thousand dollars of business expenses. So that net $48,000, that independent contractor, who could be an exercise rider, a hot walker, et cetera, can go out and get their own P3 loan on that net income.
Huh.
So it's a beneficial program for those who are independent contractors as well.
Excellent. Excellent. What other areas, Jen, have been coming up to connect the dots to?
Just a couple more just things about, the P3 loans. You go through your bank, and that loan process opened up April the 3rd for small businesses and will open up April the 10th for independent contractors. So, people, you try to work with your bank as best as possible. SBA.gov has a listing of which banks are currently SBA approved. The EIDL program, you apply directly online at the SBA. And of course, as you can imagine, there's lots of, banks and SBA have been inundated. So people have been asking about timing, and it just varies widely depending on these programs. And there are some additional programs that are applicable to those who pay employees via W-2 wages or also self-employed individuals, and they relate to either deferral of certain payment of taxes or employee retention credits. And some of these programs, the two that I just mentioned, if you do the P3 loans, you can't also do these programs. So, so there's things like that that are also applicable. And then there's, of course, some small income tax changes, but really, right now, everyone's been focused on the P3 loans and figuring out what the benefit could be for them if it makes sense to apply, and then trying to get that application in as soon as possible.
And I did read overnight and this morning that Treasury and so forth huddling about another round too of these kinds of fundings. But the immediate need and the immediate opportunity to get out in front of this, it feels like, these, I mean, hours count, essentially.
Right.
Who can help, Jen, the individual, whoever's doing the accounting for barns and trainers and outfits? Do you turn to your accountant for this? Or can some people actually, I looked at the one yesterday for the P3. It's really just a two-pager, and it seems very simple.
Yeah, so we've been working. So what I've been saying is it's imperative to get with your accountants if you're using a CPA, your CPA who files your payroll tax returns, because that's really a function of what calculates your loan amount. We're also looking at, we evaluate too, some of the different programs, looking at the P3 loan program versus some of the employee retention credits that I didn't specifically mention, but just sort of a general mention about, to see which is more beneficial for clients. And then, quite frankly, especially on the P3 side, the bank will ultimately make the decision about whether to accept or deny or ask for additional information. So, even though the banks have been telling everyone to talk to their CPA and we've been telling everyone to talk to the banks, I found it very effective if I just pick up the phone and talk to the people I know at the bank, and we come up with here's what we think is the reasonable approach. We're aware of some banks, taking a, somewhat incorrect position on certain things, but we sort of say to our client, well, do you want the loan or not? And it might be a reduced amount that we think, there should be more that qualifies. But it's really imperative to coordinate with your internal accounting team, your CPA, and then the bank that you'll be applying through on the P3 loans. The EIDL program is done through the SBA, and you really fill out the application online, and they say that they'll contact you. So there's obviously less communication there.
One thing that these visits to the websites, including the Small Business Administration, I'm going to guess, Jen, that there's going to be people that discover there's other kinds of funding and grant monies and various support mechanisms that have been kind of been there all along that people weren't even aware of.
That's right. Yeah, really, all that's come out of of this is the P3 loans are completely new. So that's something, again, implemented by the government in about a week or a week and a half time. But these EIDL, the EIDL program and some of the other SBA programs have been around for a number of years. The CARES Act just enhanced the EIDL program by providing some additional funding to take care of these $10,000 grants and also, relax some of the normal SBA loan provisions. So I think all of us that have not really necessarily been in the SBA space for a number of years are getting a bit more familiar with really in general the SBA lending programs. But certainly the P3 is by far the least restrictive. I will also mention on the P3 that 501c3 organizations who meet the criteria can also apply for the P3 loans. For the EIDL, C3s and C6s can apply for the EIDL for the EIDL program. So I just mentioned that because I'm working with a few C3s that are putting in these applications as well.
Well, and that's it's. I'm glad you brought that up. We talked to another Jen Wrights, and obviously you're referring to the various charities involved in horse care and. I suppose that the TAA those charities, are you working with TAA as well in this and coordinating those kinds of efforts?
Yeah, we're getting out to the TAA. I am the treasurer of the TAA, so we're getting out to all the accredited facilities information on how to apply for this program specifically, since it's a bit more time sensitive than the EIDL program. So. We want people to know that it's out there too. And then also on the individual side, for 2020 cash contributions made to qualifying operating charities, including the TAA, our accredited facilities, basically operating charities, not donor advised funds or private foundations. The new CARES Act allows individuals to offset up to 100% of their income. With these qualifying cash contributions to operating public charities versus the normal 60%. And so they've relaxed those rules, too, to help those who can help get money to fund these operating public charities to get to them.
Excellent. How convenient that you're the TAA treasurer. <That's>...
I didn't plan to bring that up, but sure, we'll talk about it. But yeah, we're trying to help our accredited facilities as well too.
Jen Shah joining us from Dean Dorton, who consults and, along with the Alpine Group, has been instrumental in getting, the information from the grant process here and the loan system that was so quickly established. And when it comes to timeliness, I mean, the horses are, 24/7. And 365, they're not going to stop eating. They're not going to stop getting sick. They're not. Their teeth need to be floated. Their hooves need to be done. They're going to exercise. I mean, this is the cash register rings every minute, every hour of the day, and even though the racing is paused, the work about the horses continues. And so having these mechanisms to utilize is going to be an important lifeline, and the timing really seems perfect, to get everybody through the next 60 to 75 days.
Right. Agreed.
Jen, what else do they need to know? The NTRA website, NTRA.com, has got a lot of the links and much of this information. NYTHA, you mentioned that you did a seminar yesterday. That was for NYTHA that started at 11:30. We talked to Joe Applebaum in advance of it. That is on tape. The teleconference from last week as well, for anybody that hasn't seen it and wants to 80 minutes. types of information, and then of course what we just went through here. Where else should they go, Jen, for information and access?
So if on more information for the P3 loans, they can go to treasury.gov/cares. For the EIDL program, they can go to SBA.gov. Our own firm, Dean Dorton, has a COVID-19 resources section on our website, including the materials that are also on the NTRA's website and NISA's website as well. And then for any of the, there's some new provisions as it relates to mandatory paid leave. They can go to the Department of Labor's website, which has some good FAQs for that as well. So lots to that we're all absorbing right now. So and I'm sure everyone's getting inundated with emails and different information, but those are some sources as well.
Outstanding. Jen, greatly appreciated, and we'll stay in touch. If there's updates or new information, if there's anything that NTRA and Dean Dorton need me to communicate, please feel free. Thanks so much. Stay safe.
Same to you, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Jen Shah, everybody. Dean Dorton, NTRA, and everybody trying to do what is necessary to hang in here for as long as it's going to take. We're 2 hours into the Tuesday get-together. We've done a little bit of everything. An hour to come, including a visit from Andy Serling. Next, John White. We'll check in with John, see how he's making out, and we'll wrap up today with a visit from Mike Jakubowski, the CEO of Dinsdale Auto and the president of Fauner Park. Huh? How about it? Now you know the whole, I guess that's the rest of the story, right? That, you know, why the Dinsdale tie? Because Mike is the president of Fauner. So we're going to talk to him, and I'm sure he wants to extend appreciation to the horse players and everybody out there that's made Fauner, people have become kind of fond of Fauner. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Here's the thing. From Sports Team, I heard this on BBC Radio 1 the other day. Made me smile.